Thanks, Nicole. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to, first of all, thank Nicole and Kristen for pushing to get more conversation about positive sexuality and not just about disease and pregnancy prevention. I think it's such an important thing that we're doing. And I'm so excited to be coming after these presentations because the work that we've done meshes so nicely with this. And both Drs. Jaskowski and Blunt on looking at affirmative consent and also distinguishing between lack of force versus positive experiences, and they're not the same thing. And so that's part of what we were sort of working to do when we took on this project. I also want to acknowledge two of my co-researchers here in the front row, Drs. Amanda Birnbaum and Stephanie Silvera, who are here, and Dr. Lisa Lieberman, who is not because she's in another room doing another presentation right now. So I want to give some context about how we got involved in this project. As you know, the sexual assault on college campuses is a hot, hot topic. And it didn't start with the Rolling Stone article, but that certainly brought it into the public's awareness. And now it's not just those of us who have been doing this work anyway as researchers and have been interested in it for a long time, but it's now also in the popular press, in legal circles, and in the general public, which is good. It, you know, led the White House to take action and to mandate this a survey. And what happens is that there are now a lot of new players with a lot of diverse backgrounds. There are legislators, administrators, researchers, and the general public who are interested in this topic. And there's a real priority to address these sort of big concepts. Like, how do we address sexual assault on college campuses? But there has not always been this nuanced understanding. How do we separate out sexual assault? What is sexual violence versus sexual harassment versus unwanted sexual attention, right? There are gradations. And a lot of the work that's been done so far has just sort of lumped that together. It hasn't given us a really clear understanding of what's going on. And the other thing is really wanting to be inclusive around gender identity and sexual orientation and moving away from a heteronormative bias on these issues. So the other issue for us is that this now moves from just a research focus to a big public issue that everyone has an opinion on. The question is everyone an expert, and is everyone's opinion equal? And that's part of what the complication we encountered when we were doing this, when we started this project. So, you know, how we got involved was, you know, the impetus was the White House directive, and we got, in the spring of 2014, we were approached by the Associate Dean of our College of Education and Human Services and the Office of Campus Life and Student Development. And we wanted to get out in front of the White House requirements. So the White House was saying, this is coming down the pipe. We're going to require college campuses to do this work. And once we put that in place, you're not going to have a whole lot of leeway as to what you get, how you get to measure these things. And we felt it was really important that if we could do this before then, we could ask our own, to develop our own survey that addressed our own local campuses' needs. Why did we get involved, you may ask? Well, first of all, we all have an interest in the field. This was a wonderful opportunity for us to collaborate, bringing together our diverse scholarly interests. So as public health researchers, you know, our interests span from sexual health, sexuality education, mental health, campus safety, population-based survey methods, and human subject protection around controversial issues. We wanted to ensure that there would be a public health focus, and this was a unique opportunity to conduct research in combination with activism. This presented to us an opportunity to educate members of our own campus community, to improve our campus environment so we can move not just responding to sexual assault and sexual violence, but to create a climate that supports positive sexuality experiences, and to do some social justice work. When we were sort of approached to do this, one of the things we wanted to, we asked was, can we ask what we want? And that was a real sort of line in the sand for us about whether we got involved. And we were saying, yes, you can ask what you want. That yes became very complicated as we moved on. But we want, one of the things that we wanted to do was to go beyond the mandate, right? We wanted to not just know how much sexual violence is there. Am I doing something? Okay. Not just how much sexual violence is there at the university and how we respond after the fact, but what is the campus climate as far as discouraging versus tolerating these behaviors and as far as supporting a positive sexual environment? How do we stand on issues of sexual harassment and unwanted attention? Are we fully inclusive and non-heteronormative? How do students define consent? How does the administration define consent? What do we mean by affirmative consent? And we also wanted to look at not just victimization, but also to the extent that students themselves have been perpetrators of behaviors that they may or may not have perceived to have been sexual violence or sexual assault. As well as we wanted to know about their knowledge and trust, knowledge about and trust in the university resources. So, oh no, it didn't show up. Oh, there it is. So here, keep going. So here's, I'm just going to open this all up. Ta-dum. All right. So here are like the three main players involved. There was the Office of Campus and Student Life, there's the university administration, and there's the research team. And you could see that in the center, you know, we all shared the priority of wanting to follow the White House directive, and also we all had a commitment to a positive campus climate. But then as you can see, there are varying priorities that overlap in different areas. And two things that I wanted to point out are you see the blank space. And I would just say that, you know, what we discovered as we've been going along is that there are competing priorities, but that they're not always transparent. And when I say they're not always transparent, I don't mean to attach a nefarious intent behind it. I think sometimes people don't even know what their own intent is, and we all share language about wanting to support and protect the university's reputation, but what we mean by that can be very different. So that has been areas of challenge, so sort of having it's taken on, required lots and lots and lots of conversations to find out about, you know, what we all are trying to accomplish here. So you can see there was wide initial interest. There are many sectors within the university that have a stake. All of these groups are stakeholders. Some are also gatekeepers, and others are not. Some of our survey development principles, we wanted to address and go beyond mandate. We wanted to use or adapt existing measures whenever possible. And we wanted to reflect an inclusive and nuanced understanding of gender and sexuality in both language and content. We had concerns about defining sexual harassment and assault. We wanted to tease out different specific behaviors to get a better picture of what's happening. The length of the survey, because we were using explicit language on, and I'll give you examples later, it became a much longer survey. And an interesting thing that we got stuck on, believe it or not, was on language and whether we use women and men or whether we use girls and guys. And, you know, for those of us on the research team, all of our guts said it's got to be men and women. But the more conversations we had around this, we ended up landing on girls and guys. And we didn't, you'll see, we didn't use, we used non-gender-specific language as much as possible, but in certain situations we needed to, because basically that's what the students are using, and we wanted to be accessible to them. But we had a real explanation in our introduction of the survey as to why we made that decision. And around the heteronormative language, Montclair actually is an award-winning institution for its commitment to LGBTQ students. And so that was something that was really important to us. Our question topics went from demographic and descriptive to, you know, how engaged they are in the college life, Their perceptions of our campus as being proactive and or responsive to unwanted sexual behaviors. Their experiences intervening with or reporting sexual harassment and assault. So for example, questions, you know, while being a student at Montclair State, did I challenge a friend who made a sexist joke? Yes or no. Did I report a friend that committed rape? Yes or no. We ask them to define consent, very specific situations. Was this consent? Is this consent? Is this consent? Their experiences with harassment, assault, and rape. So, for example, as a student at Montclair State, I made offensive remarks about someone's appearance, body, or sexual activities. I inserted my penis, fingers, or objects into someone's vagina without their consent. So we were asking very explicit questions. And here are some of those questions. They were on a 5-point scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree with a prefer not to answer. And we made sure to ask questions about prevention as much as responding after the fact. The leading to these questions emphasized that all responses are confidential and anonymous, and that questions focused on their role as a Montclair State student. The use of explicit language allowed us to separate out sexual harassment from sexual assault from more violent assault, and this was something that we had been finding was more problematic on some of the surveys that we had adapted. The IRB, as you can imagine, their main concerns were about disclosure of potentially injurious sexual information or illegal activities and the possibility for psychological distress. We were having discussions, and we still are, about whether you require this or not, and the IRB said you can require them to fill out consent as far as the consent form, but you cannot require them to do the whole survey without having these problems. So frequent communication with IRB has been really, really important, and having one of our research members be on the IRB has been really, really, really helpful. We came across an interesting concept as we were working with the administration, and that is called corporate interest. And this is a term that was introduced to us from the highest levels of the administration, and corporate interest, which is defined as that the university has an obligation to respond to any findings, any results. And so they became very interested in being involved in this survey because anything that we find, they must respond to. And so there was this really interesting piece about they only wanted things included that where the results had an actionable piece behind it. So for example, when we were talking about helping students figure out or finding out what students thought about consent, this consent, is this consent, and one senior administrator said, well, if we find out that students don't understand what consent is, what do we do about that? And so that was our opportunity to educate them about, well, then we need to do some education about what is consent. They were concerned about explicit language, as you might imagine. Do you have to say, did someone put their finger in your anus? And, you know, we needed to sort of talk about why that explicit language was really important. They also were concerned about avoiding negative bias, the assumption that the university is, you know, the assumption that they're not going to be doing what they need to do. So we're coming up against a corporate interest versus research interest. So one of the things that helped our ability to respond were other research that's coming out. The Rutgers report that made recommendations that were really in line with the stuff that we were already doing. One really interesting thing that I won't have time to talk about here, but I can later if you want, is this idea that they recommended having an advisory board, and we've been really struggling with this concept of whether or not to have an advisory board or what the function of that advisory board should be. And then the other thing was that when the AAU report came out and universities were releasing their own individual data, that we were able to go back to the university and say, so you're not going to be sticking your neck out, you're not going to be all alone, because other universities are also reporting their own stuff. All right, so the other thing really quickly is that we've also now discovered, based on some recent experiences of our own, that we need to put in some items about student and other and faculty and administrators' understanding of reporting and mandated reporting and confidentiality. We've come to realize a lack of understanding about that, even though there's been an effort to educate people about that. So we're continuing to have discussions around academic freedom versus implications for the university. The administration was very clear. They gave us in writing a statement that said we will not interfere with academic freedom. And yet, you know, it's complicated. And we all have a vested interest in the well-being of the university. And so we need to sort of have those discussions, the discussion of what the role of an advisory board would be. So we're still revising the survey. We're planning to pilot test it in the spring. We're moving forward, but still addressing challenges in a very complicated process. So thank you very much.